What has gold been telling us, especially in the past few months?
One word, everything. So, what do I mean by that? It's telling us the biggest story that it is telling us and has been all year is rising geopolitical tensions is becoming a visible threat to America's hegemony. And the war in Ukraine, the tensions in the Middle East, and what appears to be starting to grow in Latin America are all part of this big puzzle. And that will include gold. I think we're due for a nice correction, maybe down to 3,000. And then it's time to buy again. All bull markets are interrupted by corrections. But it's not the end of the bull market. I'm not clever enough to know what price gold will be in 3 years' time. But the minimum that I can see by looking at what we see in the DXY, the dollar index, falling by 50%. So we can see gold at 6,000 in, where are we now, in 3 years' time.
Simon Hunt, good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. And thank you for having me on your show.
Anytime.
Pleasure as always.
It's my pleasure. I will have you on anytime. I just really thoroughly enjoy our discussions. Let's start with gold. Gold has ripped. It's really ripped all year, but it's well over $4,000 an ounce at this recording. Who knows? It might certainly can and might correct some. We just have had a huge run. What has gold been telling us, especially in the past few months?
One word, everything. So, what do I mean by that? It's telling us the biggest story that it is telling us and has been all year is rising geopolitical tensions. Whether it be in Ukraine, Middle East, Venezuela, or I think more importantly, it's the big picture, which is that the maturing of the BRICS group of nations is becoming a visible threat to America's hegemony. And the war in Ukraine, the tensions in the Middle East, and what appears to be starting to grow in Latin America are all part of this big puzzle. So, why does America view the development of BRICS so strongly? It's because a large part of the world, if allowed to continue, will no longer be the servant of America. America will no longer be able to bully its way around most of the world, whether it be in Asia, Africa, or the Middle East. The second part of the problem for America is that the power of the dollar has been part of America's ability to dominate the world. And already you are starting to see members of BRICS doing trade amongst themselves without the use of the dollar. And today's announcement from New Delhi that they will use rupees and other BRICS currencies wherever they can without going through the dollar route. It goes further than that, because the plan appears to be that countries in the BRICS group with trade surpluses with other countries will have those surpluses balanced by an equivalent amount of gold. Because what is starting to go on is the Shanghai Gold Exchange building gold vaults in BRICS member countries. There is a gold facility now in Hong Kong. The Shanghai Gold Exchange has either completed or is about to complete a gold vault in Saudi Arabia, which will mean that more than just the odd parcel of China's buying gold from Saudi Arabia will be paid for in CNY, the Chinese currency. It could mean all of it, because sitting in Saudi Arabia will be a gold vault from which they can extract, in that gold vault, the balancing surplus of Chinese currency. So if you multiply that out to all the major BRICS countries, I've forgotten the figure, but it's a lot of dollars will not have to be used to finance this trade. So, to what extent is Washington going to be prepared to allow this development to occur? Either the moment will come when Washington will decide we have got to eat hat and find compromises so that we can enjoin ourselves to this new multipolar world. If they can't eat hat, then the end result will be either financial or military war or both. And if that happens, it's probably going to be sometime around 2028, 2030. So, have I answered your first question?
Yeah, you did. I have a follow-up if you're ready for it.
Whenever.
Okay, so where does Europe fit in all of this? This new multipolar world, if you would, that's not as dominated by the US, specifically the UK, France, and Germany, all three of those countries, which specifically France and Germany are the biggest engines of Europe. What's going on there and how do they fit in? And is Europe, it seems to be falling apart. Do you see that continuing?
Europe is falling apart. There's no question about that. It's falling apart politically and it's falling apart economically. Politically, the electorates of the UK, France, Germany, Holland, Belgium, Spain, Italy are fed up by being bossed around by Brussels. So you have an electorate which is at war with its government. Mm-hmm. Economically, you are on the verge of seeing severe weaknesses developing in your major European economies. It's not helped by the need, according to the three major countries, of supplying Ukraine with cash to help defend Ukraine from further Russian incursions. I think that by the end of this year, you are going to see Europe, or certainly the EU, in serious recession. One of the big issues is the banking sectors. You are seeing the prospect, because of economic weakness and political discontent, and the risk that Europe is forced into supporting Ukraine, what is very likely to emerge is capital controls. Already in Spain, there's a sort of pseudo-capital control. If you want to go abroad, you're only allowed, I think it's $3,000 per head, and you have to get the approval of the government through the income tax authority. And if you want to invest abroad or take money abroad, anything above 100,000 euros, you need special permission. So what would capital controls in Europe do globally, given the interconnectivity of banks globally? There will be knock-on consequences. At a time when, particularly in America, you've got cockroaches starting to appear in the credit system, to use Jamin Dimon's word, where, as he says, where there is one cockroach, there's always more. So the underbelly of the financial system is strained and is at risk of falling apart. In America, the private credit system, or the shadow banking system, I believe totals $1.7 trillion. And globally, it's $250 trillion.
Jeez. Oh, gosh.
So this is another reason why gold is being bought. Though I think that short term, probably we're due for a big correction. It's already started, but will explode when equity markets begin a large correction, which is probably anytime soon. Because what happens? Margins are called, and whether you're an institution or a household, you have to cough up immediately. So what do? You sell where my profits are. Mm-hmm. And that will include gold. Mm-hmm. So I think we're due for a nice correction, maybe down to, and then it's time to buy again. All bull markets are interrupted by corrections, but it's not the end of the bull market. I'm not clever enough to know what price gold will be in 3 years' time. But the minimum that I can see by looking at what we see in the DXY, the dollar index, falling by 50%. So we can see gold at 6,000 in, where are we now, in 3 years' time as a minimum.
As a minimum. What do you see if the EU breaks apart? We just said Europe's a mess right now, and I would say the world's a mess. But walk me through the other side, specifically with Europe.
Well, I think the immediate answer to that is that within 2 years, we will see the breakup of the EU.
Jeez, gosh.
Oh, we're back to national governments.
Yeah, and I'm very supportive of that. But that just has implications on, if you think about it, just on the currencies, the banking systems, insurance,
the whole
everything. So you go back to individual sovereign nations, and again, I think that's a great thing. My wife is from Europe, and I go over there often.
Your wife is from where?
She's from the Czech Republic.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Chechia now, they call it now. Been over there many times and going back over there in January. But so if they go more, I guess, sovereign countries smaller, as they should, in my opinion. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be an expensive transition.
It's part of, when you think about it, it's part of the multipolar world.
Yeah, right. So countries, smaller countries will have more say locally, but not as much say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
As they should. But not as much say because they're not a part of a behemoth, if you would, geopolitically. But that's probably a good thing because then you don't push people around, right?
Yeah.
So do you see European escalation of war with Russia going east, or do you see them aligning themselves more with Russia because they have to?
Important question. I'm just thinking where I start. Where I start is that Putin has made it known to America very visibly, constantly, consistently, what their demands are for ending the war in Ukraine, which is basically all the Russian-speaking parts of Ukraine should be known internationally as part of Russia. That Ukraine will never become a member of NATO, that NATO withdraws all its forces and whatever else out of Ukraine, that the Bandera Nazi mob is exterminated. Mm-hmm. And then we can start negotiations.
Right?
But the problem is that neither NATO nor Washington accepts these terms. So we are going to see the war continue, and it will continue until Russia has beaten NATO stroke Ukraine. And that will include taking Odessa and Kiev and having exterminated the Bandera Nazi group. Because if you don't exterminate them, they're only going to come back in a few years' time and begin another revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that there is going to be no peace in Ukraine for a long time. I don't know how long. It might be next year sometime. It may be longer. But we know that Russia is prepared for a long war.
So Russia's prepared for a long war. Do you think they engage more with NATO? And what I mean by NATO militarily and fighting? Or because to me, it seems like I'm surprised Russia hasn't done that already. And it seems to me like Putin's actually shown a lot of restraint. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Look, absolutely right. But I think that patience is beginning to run out. And if you talk to people who've recently been in Moscow and the subject of tomahawks comes up, even if the tomahawk is not what it is being made out to be, the answer, to paraphrase what Putin has said, tomahawks will make no impact on the battleground. But if they are sent into Ukraine, even if it's only one, then that means a rupture, perhaps forever, between America and Russia. So, the lines are being clearly drawn. And they have been clearly drawn by Russia. America or Washington listens, but clearly has not understood. And I don't think they understand now. Because they think Russia's going to blink. We are the big strong man. Sorry, it's not the case any longer.
Right. It seems to me like in this whole, we'll call it a chess match, geopolitical chess match, it seems to me like Russia's going actually further east or south, if you would, to China, India, for trade and economic development. And it seems we are the U.S., when I say we, the U.S. is staying, well, we'd stay in our own hemisphere, if you would. It seems to me that the odd person out, if you would, is the continent of Europe. Where do they go? What do they do? And yeah, I mean, they don't have no natural resources or very few. Their population is in decline and their economy is shrinking. So what do they do?
Well, I think that's a very good question. And it's quite obvious that for some years, the Kremlin policy has been to move east. Talk to people who've been in Eastern Russia, Siberia, around Vladivostok. It's booming. Money is poured in. Infrastructure is being developed. And if you look at the northern part of China and the northwestern part, they're booming too. Trade routes have been opened up. It's boom time there. So what is it going to mean to Europe? Is America going to, how can I politely put it,
Don't be polite.
Is America going to basically take over Europe as it did after World War II?
Right.
Or is America going to say, you can stew in your own juices? We want all our power and financial power here back in America.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the more likely outlook.
So if that happens, if more firepower back to America, is that what Venezuela is all about, if you would? Because it's very confusing to me what's going on there. Why would we go into Venezuela or be trying to stir up trouble? Is it oil? Is it? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me other than oil.
I think it's, I'm glad you brought it up, the Venezuelan question, because I think it goes back to a long-term objective that Washington has. If you control global energy resources, you control the world.
Yeah.
Therefore, you retain your hegemonic status.
Mm.
Venezuela has the biggest known reserves of oil. That's stage one. That's probably the easy one. Then you go to Brazil. I've forgotten the figure, but they have something like 1 to 2% of global oil and gas reserves. Then you go to Argentina, and they've got these massive untapped shale oil reserves. Then you go to the Middle East. If you are able to cause regime change in Iran, which America and Israel seem to think they can do quite easily, I think they're wrong,
mm-hmm.
then you've got another big energy resource in your own tank, as it were. The interesting question is what happens to the Gulf countries,
yeah,
other Gulf countries. And the conclusion I come to, as my personal conclusion, is that they are playing both sides, i.e. the BRICS side, China and Russia and India, and America. So which side will they choose? If there is an attack on Iran, whoever wins that attack, they will go along with.
So
you this, make your choice.
Yeah.
Now, see, if America gets the Gulf, Iran, Venezuela, etc., etc., that only leaves Russia.
Right.
So that's the last one to go after.
That is scary. It's all scary. But
it comes back to a simple thing. If you want to retain your hegemonic status, you get control of global
energy.
Energy.
Yeah. Yeah. So is Russia feeling that pressure? Do they see this? Is that why?
Oh, they know there's a long war coming. They're prepared for it.
That's why they're no longer in SWIFT. That's why they broke away from that. That's why they have their own, they're making agreements
That's
and treaties
with China.
That's why they've
got very little external debt and very little internal debt. And the economy is fine, thank you very much.
Right.
38% of the economy is running at, last I heard, was at 8%. That's the war-related economy. The other 60-odd percent is probably running at only 1 to 2%. And that's primarily due to the fact that the central bank has been fighting inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So interest rates, I think, peaked at 22%. I think they're 17% now. And inflation is coming down. And as it comes down, so will interest rates. And so, therefore, will the 60% of the economy start growing perceptibly again? I mean, a friend who is visiting Moscow at the moment said that he was stuck in a traffic jam for 1.5 hours. Why? Because everybody's got cars.
Right. And going to work.
That's not a sign of economic weakness.
Right. Well, okay, so let's game this out. So let's say if there is a long war with Russia, or I'll call it the East, there's an issue for the U.S., not only from manpower and opening up another front. And to all my viewers and listeners, I'm just looking at this, gaming this out and looking at this strategically. Wouldn't China then just start dumping all of our bonds? And then we'd have a major problem with, interest rates and inflation, right?
That's the last card that China will play.
Why the last?
Because they're playing a big card at the moment.
Taiwan?
Which is no. I think that, and Xi has said it several times, we don't have to invade Taiwan. Within 2 to 3 years, Taiwan will come into our lap internally. The real card that they're playing is denying America directly and indirectly the flow of rare earths and magnets.
Yes.
That means that if China does not relent, does not compromise, then in a matter of a few months, defense industries, appliance makers, et cetera, will be out of rare earths and magnets.
Yeah. Completely.
And that's data that came from the Atlantic, one of the big think tanks.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yes, I think you're absolutely right. So then the military.
And I just to carry on, I go back to what were the hidden agreements between Russia, China, and India at the SCO meetings and the military parade in Beijing, which was, we are going to stand firm. Russia over Ukraine, which I've just explained. Iran over independence. Modi over oil. And China over trade and tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think China is going to give one inch. Whereas the general view seems to be, oh, there'll be compromise. China to not to do so. Wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The leadership has the public behind them. You talk to anybody in China.
Mm-hmm.
We stand firm. And they're prepared for it.
Yeah. Okay, so, and then we'll wrap it up and end on this. The Middle East, what does that play and how does that equate into it? Because, again, lots of energy there. We talked a little bit about it. Regime change potentially in Iran. I don't think we can do it, or whoever's involved can do that. Israel, whoever's involved can do that. But it seems to me that it's in our best interest, and then maybe that was why Trump was there in the summer, to be very nice to Saudi Arabia, if you would.
Everybody who knows the region very well is pretty clear that this is a ceasefire plan to get the hostages back.
Yeah.
It's no peace plan. Netanyahu, through probably a false flag operation, will find an excuse to start bombing Gaza again.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up. Yes.
And then you have President Trump threatening Hamas, we are going to bomb the hell out of you.
Mm-hmm.
If he starts doing that, what is going to be the reaction of Iran?
Right.
It's bound to be to support Hamas, which means that they will start hitting Israel strongly with hypersonic missiles, some new ones which they've just developed, that the American stroke Israel defense systems will not be able to cope with.
Mm-hmm.
Then you must not forget Hezbollah. Hezbollah has not been defeated. They have been regrouping.
Mm-hmm.
And if their fellow guys in Hamas are being bombed, they are bound to retaliate.
Mm-hmm.
So, bottom line, no peace plan. And the question that needs to be answered is, will America stroke Iran, stroke Israel, strike Iran again? I think it is very likely. I'm not sure when. May not be until next year. But Iran stands in the way of the creation of Greater Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what the Zionists dream of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To me, I mean, it just seems like a crazy play. And I'm not doubting you at all. I'm not doubting what you say. I certainly hope you're wrong, but I'm not doubting what you say. But it seems
I hope I'm wrong too.
Right? But that's a war on three fronts. That's three different wars. That's Latin America and Venezuela. That is Ukraine, Europe, China. And
they
then
may,
that's the
they
Middle
East. Not occur simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what's the first shoe to drop? What would you say out of all of that? Iran?
No, Venezuela.
Yeah, I think you're right. Gosh.
But don't forget there's an ongoing war in Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
which is likely to escalate. But escalation will be without much more than what America is currently supplying Ukraine with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's ongoing. Gaza will blow up any day,
mm-hmm.
despite the soothing words that Vance, Trump's son-in-law, and Wyckoff have been saying. It's quite contrary to what the RT reporters who are on the ground in Gaza are saying. and reporting.
Yeah. Well, again, that's what gold's telling us, right? That's why gold's up.
It all comes back to gold is telling us more about tensions than inflation.
Yeah.
The inflation side will probably start appearing second half of next year.
Yeah. I would say tension and just getting away from U.S. hegemony.
That's what a large part of the world wants.
Yeah, as it should. That's what I would want. And that's what I do want as an American.
We've had 80 years of American domination.
We've had a lot of war.
The world has grown, matured. And where is the growth now? Future growth. It's not Europe. It's not America.
Latin America and Asia.
Asia, Africa.
Yeah, Africa.
And potentially Middle East.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Well, Simon, I think we'll end on there. I want to thank you. It's always a great talk with you. If people want to do business with you, they want to learn more about you, how do they do that?
Simon-Hunt.com, or else you can get us on our website, Simon Hunt Strategic Services.
I'll put all of that in the show notes below on you, the YouTube thank channel, you. Apple, and Spotify. I want to thank you so much for your time and love to have you on again, as I usually do.
Thank you for having me. Enjoyed it enormously.
Yeah, me too. I do this for me. No, you know what? I don't enjoy it. No, I do enjoy it. It's very stimulating.
Well, I don't enjoy it either.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's very
how I put the dots together.
Right? Right? Yeah, it's very stimulating and it makes me think, which is fun. But it's also like scary. So, but I love having you on. I'll have you on anytime, but I'll reach out again here in the next 4 to 6 weeks, as I usually do.
Super.
All right. Thank you so much,
Simon. Until then.
Take care.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.